take a 2288, which is the emergency response record bill. Okay. There's someone approaching us here. Are you the gentleman from the ERB?
Yes, ma'am. I was going to be here to respond to some questions.
Right. Could you identify yourself for the record?
Patrick Mosey, a member of the ERB.
Okay. We had some questions for you. There were some amendments that were proposed on this bill, and we wanted some information on the language. Do you have the proposed amendments?
Yes, ma'am, I believe I do. You've changed from official duties include to focal duties are, I take it.
Well,
that's one of the amendments.
That's the proposed amendments. We haven't really done anything with it yet. But one of the things that we were curious about, I was curious about, is I get a little nervous about inserting language in the statute when we don't have a definition for it, and there may be a whole body of case law that relates to. So,
understand.
If you could tell us what focal duties are, if you could cite us to some, if you have some cited cases in which you defined that term.
Well, when the Employee Relations Board tussled with the same problem about how to identify a specific position as being a guard or a security guard or an institution,
right.
Because of the nature of mixed duties, we decided to abandon the terms. And what we said was we intentionally used the term focal rather than primary or principal duties because the latter terms come with built-in ambiguity between most important and most time-consuming.
It's been developed in the case law.
Sure. Say, for instance, if you had a clerical support person who 10% of the time did 911 or performed 911 duties, the argument could be made that even though that was 10% of the time, the support person's most important or primary duty was the 911 function. I'm not sure that the committee would want that sort of person excluded as a non-strikeable. The focal duties of that job would be the clerical duties. And so to get away from those kinds of ambiguities, how much time you necessarily spend in that non-strikeable duty function, or whether or not it might be the most important duty you perform, albeit a very small part of your job, we use the word focal and turned it into a term of art. It means something to us, and we are the ones that are going to ultimately adjudicate that.
Right, and we want to know what it means to you.
What it means to us. It means that the primary purpose of the position, okay, the purpose of the position, would be to guard the prisoners and keep them confined. In this case, the primary purpose of the position would be to respond to 911 types of calls.
Okay, so it doesn't mean how much time they spend on it.
That'll be a factor, but not dispositive.
Okay.
Nor even if it's, it could be that the person is a 40% 911 responder, but that's the majority of what they do. All other duties are split up in lesser percentages. But nevertheless, that job, if you look at it closely, the job's defined as, and its primary purpose is, its focal purpose is, to do something other than the 911 function. The word focal is...
Did you develop this term on the arbitration case of the prison guards?
Yes, ma'am. Indeed we did. And it went to the Court of Appeals, and everything was passed out of the Court of Appeals, and ran us into yet another problem about mixed units.
Right, that was another issue that we got into, of course, when we get into this, and is the situation that we'll have these bargaining units that do have some emergency workers in them, that if this bill passes, we won't be able to strike, and there was a lot of committee discussion about how the local jurisdictions would handle that, and if we had been advised that there was a procedure that they can appeal, I believe, to your board, to petition your board to get a clarification of the bargaining unit.
That's correct. They would indeed petition to redesignate the unit, and the redesignate again is a word with no particular meaning except to us. the employer would simply come to us and say, we have a rather large catch-all unit. You could have road people in with regular support staff for the city or county function. I don't know just precisely where 911 people would be attached, but the employer would come to us and ask the ERB to carve out, if you will, remove that small percent mm-hmm. of non-strikers that were created, non-strikers, designated so this session, if mm-hmm. that happened. And we would, most assuredly, if they were a very small minority of the group, take them out mm-hmm. and make them a separate unit, and thereby avoid their presence in the overall unit, making the whole unit incapable of striking. In other words, sending them all to binding interest arbitration,
right,
which is not favored, I guess, under the Act.
One of the things, could you tell us how much time that takes, and in practical terms, what we'd be dealing with here, or what the local governments would be dealing with if this bill passes and they get into a situation where they want a unit clarification? How long would that take? Can you expedite that?
We would expedite it on request of the employer, and I suspect that whole process might run 2 months. Once that initial case and its rationale were handed down and distributed among other employers through the normal mechanisms, I suspect that the other employers and the other labor organizations would just come to their own agreement about separating these units out and not even bother to go through the process with us again. The first case would teach the result clearly. And the parties would then hopefully just get together and recognize the writing on the wall and separate those non-strikers from the overall unit.
There was also some discussion, I guess, about the penitentiary case, and as I understand, although I haven't read the case, the bargaining unit was primarily made up of people who were not subject to strike, maybe with a sprinkling of other types.
And correct.
In this case, it would probably be the other way, where perhaps in the bargaining unit, most people would be entitled to strike, and just a small number of people.
That situation to us is intolerable. Intolerable is a strong word. We would not let that situation obtain for very long if asked to remedy it.
So you would do it through a unit clarification?
We call it a redesignation, but it's the same kind of operation.
Okay.
Again, the flip side of that is, if we have a very large unit of non-strikers and only a very few members of the unit who can strike and who are not able to because of their presence in the unit, we have certified such units. Just the flip side of what we're talking about.
I see. Uh-huh.
Because their community of interest is so high, say a dispatcher with a police organization.
Mm-hmm.
But you have 30 or 40 or 50 police officers and one or two dispatchers, and if we didn't let the dispatchers into that unit and regrettably take away their right to strike by doing so, they would be virtually unorganizable.
That's what I was concerned too. The bargaining unit with two people in it, you don't exactly have a great deal of clout when you're at the bargaining.
That's correct. And in that situation where the majority are non-strikers and just a very few lose their right, we have certified such units. The flip side of the coin, however, and that's the one you will run into when you designate these 911 operators, as I understand it, you're going to end up with a bunch of units with the vast majority of members strikeable, but losing that right because of the presence of the 911. That situation we simply do not allow to remain if asked to remedy.
Mm-hmm. Would you put them in some other unit or that also can't strike, or would you just have their own unit?
Two things could happen. They would remain represented by the same labor organization in a very small unit, I suppose. I don't know how many 911 operators there would be in any given situation, but they would either have their own separate unit represented by the same labor organization, or if there is an existing unit of police officers, non-strikable types, that organization could come and ask us to remove the 911 operators from the general catch-all unit and give them to us, because we the police are non-strikers. So they could also go over into a much larger unit of non-strikers where they would have more bargaining power.
Uh-huh.
So it could happen one of two ways. It would just depend on how it came at us.
When you're making those definition of unit determinations, what numbers or what ratios do you use to determine where the split should be?
There are no, if I understand your question, there are no set numbers.
Like, you know, if you have a 50-50 situation or one out of five or one out of ten or how...
Strike, no strike?
Yeah.
I suggest that if, say, in a larger unit, if 10% of that unit were being denied the right to strike because of its presence with a larger overall non-strikeable unit, we wouldn't look too kindly at that. We'd probably separate it. It is just when you've got almost a de minimis number of members of the unit losing their right to strike, minimal number, and it will never happen, I don't think, that one or two or three or ten non-strikers, 911s, if you designate them so, are going to remove a 200-person unit, or even maybe a 50-person or a 30-person, that we're trying to protect the people's right to strike as much as we can, and it's just a very few numbers that we're going to make that suffer by reason of a community of interest factor that overrides that.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for the witness?
The year's hiatus in the bill, the effective date is...
Well, it's in the amendment. We haven't adopted it yet.
Okay.
We're trying to figure out how
that
to make
idea,
this work.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That idea is a almost necessary to get this amendments to these units done without having any adverse or ill effect during the interim.
Think we could get it done in a year?
I think so. If our constituency out there was wide awake, I think it'd be easily done in a year.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I have
Senator Otto.
On that effective date, what would be wrong with removing the effective date? Would it cause problems?
We've got to have.
Well, so it would be effective at the 90 days after session
Shuts down.
You run the risk of negotiations starting in a unit that ultimately, because of the presence of the 911, if you designate 911 operators as non-strikers, it could be that their presence, if the negotiations roll along fast enough, if a petition doesn't get filed, it could be that they take a whole unit to binding interest arbitration rather than have the opportunity to strike. I don't know if that made any sense. It is precisely what we've been talking about trying to avoid, which is having the presence of a very small number of non-strikers prevent the whole unit from being able to strike. And that it takes some time to kind of... switch that around. Or
another question?
Senator Otto.
All right, you indicate then that the effective date, 90 days after we shut down, is too short of a period. What about January 1 instead of July 1? My problem is July 1 seems
a long,
too long.
Long time. Senator, I wish I could help you. January 1 might make it. It might make it if the employers were all aware of the bill and instantly aware of it and aware of its effects. They could submit their petitions and we would expedite those petitions. And it may be that a January 1 date would be sufficient. I, of course, would sit here and be as conservative as I could trying to tell you how soon it'd take to get it done because I wouldn't want to be the cause of being too... optimistic in what I'm saying. It could well be that January 1 would make it. I could not give you any guarantees because most of that is out of my control. It takes the employers to come to us.
Madam Chair.
Senator Otto.
I think with the communication that we have now, like League of Oregon City Bulletin, Association of Oregon Counties Bulletin, Oregon School Boards Association Bulletin, I'm sure that all those employers could be aware.
That would be my hope too, Senator, they are the only
ones. And say July 1 of 1986, well then you could probably make a reason to postpone it until January 1 of 87. I guess my feeling is set a deadline and meet it and make it January 1 of 86.
It may well work through all the mechanisms you say. Those would be the ones. And it, I think after the first case runs its course, we might not have occasion to see another one, because it will teach the result in every other situation, and there will be no sense in relitigating the issue.
Anything further, Senator?
No.
Okay, I would like to get Tom Brum or Mary Botkin or Sam Gillespie, whoever is, to also respond to the amendments. And maybe if you could stay here also in case we have any more questions. Can we pull another chair up? Mm-hmm. We've now had a definition of what focal means to the ERB, who will be defining this law, and also some discussion on the what the effective date would be. So we appreciate your input on those two points, on the proposed amendments that are.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Mary Botkin. I'm here this morning representing the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And with me is Sam Gillespie. I'm sorry, Sam came up with me.
Maybe we can get Sam a chair. Maybe
well,
Tom?
Sam is here in
Tom?
The room with me.
Tom, could you give him a chair?
And since we represent most of the 911 operators, it would be helpful to have Sam here. Sam is the representative and the business agent for our 911 operators in the city of Portland for the Tri-County area. We have, number one, let me respond to something that came up at the last hearing, because I have done some checking on the numbers that we would be talking about, and we looked into the Kelly Butte operation to find out how many people would be brought in under a no-strike clause that would not normally fall under that definition anyway. And we have ascertained that there would be 5 employees that would be brought in under that no-strike clause by leaving the bill in its original form.
Madam Chair?
Senator Hawkins.
Are you saying 5 employees other than operator? Or are you saying 5, what do you call them here?
Emergency
telephone workers?
Madam Chair, Senator Houck, there are 5 individuals at Kelly Butte that are not either sworn officers or emergency communications operators, okay? No. There are 5 support staff up there.
Oh, it's in addition to the
right
emergency telephone workers.
Right. There would only be 5 people in that unit that would not normally be covered under no strike. Now, you have to remember that most of the people who work in supervisory roles up there are already covered under a no-strike law anyway. And I think at this point, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have Sam respond, because I think that he has some concerns that about carving out pieces of the unit. And if it's all right with the chair's permission, I'll turn it over to Sam.
Okay, I'd like to just get a brief response, because we've got a very huge agenda today, and we're trying to...
Okay, Madam Chair, Sam Gillespie, Oregon AFSCME. The concern I have is we coalition bargain with 11 unions in the city of Portland. It's one bargain, it's called the District Council of Trade Unions, and all the crafts are represented. We are the biggest affiliate with 950 members out of approximately 1,700. Of that bargaining, our local 189 jurisdiction and the District Council of Trade Unions, 90 to 100 of those people are emergency communication operators. My concern today is very simple, and perhaps Board Member Mosley could answer this. I think he has, but I need it crystal clear. Would, if this bill becomes law, would those 90 folks be carved out into a second bargaining unit? And if that's the case, I've got problems with this bill. We don't want to separate that bargaining unit. We want it to remain intact.
Well, maybe Mr. Mosley would respond. I took it from his 10% account. It probably would be, but let's hear.
That's correct. I don't have any doubt that 90 on 1,000 or 90 on 1,100 would not be something the board would bless if the question came up to us. We would take them out.
Okay. All right, Tom. Did you want to respond or to the amendments? Actually, Sam, that has nothing to do with the amendments. That's the basic thrust of the bill. The thrust of the bill is to give these people a separate status. A binding arbitration status rather than right to strike.
We wouldn't be opposed to that in itself, but we would be opposed to fragmentation of that group.
Well, that's a necessary consequence of giving them binding arbitration. You sort of can't have it both ways, I guess. Did you want to respond?
Madam Chair, if I may, there's one way out of this dilemma, and it is not a matter of policy that the board would favor or not, and that is simply legislatively overrule the case that caused this to be the result. That is, mixed units, strike, no strike, all go to combining arbitration. That could be legislatively overturned. It takes some drafting, and it would simply say if you had a mixed unit, and that'd create, you know, 1,000 other kinds of problems, but that's the only way out of that.
I realize that's the only choice. They either are going to go to binding arbitration or you got to carve them out. That's all you can do. Right.
Or you can change the whole game.
No, what you're saying, I know, but if by statute we say, okay, if it's a mixed unit, it goes to binding arbitration. That's really the choices. Either we change the statute and say they all go to binding arbitration because otherwise they're going to have to be carved out, right?
Correct.
Okay. That would be a little bit broader than the scope of the
Madam Chair, I guess for the record, we're going to have to go on record in opposition to the bill. We can't support carving out our unit in the city of Portland.
Well, as I understand it, ASTM is still represent them.
Madam Chair, I think the city would have some problems with that as well. They're not here. I'm not going to speak for them. But the city of Portland, I think, would have a problem. They already complain about there's too many bargaining units that they have to negotiate with. I don't think that they would be wanting to do that.
Well, could they be added into, do you represent the police or the fire?
Yeah. I represent all the non-sworn police officers as well as the emergency communications people.
All right, but do you represent anybody up there that's subject to arbitration?
No.
So
all
they couldn't
of our
be put
are
in another one of your units? In other words, they couldn't be put in another.
It would create two locals in effect, and that's something that we're not anxious to do.
Okay.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Tom Brum. I represent Communications Workers Local 9255. Just to the amendments, the way Mr. Mosley had defined focal duties, I see nothing wrong with that amendment, and it probably would be helpful. As for the effective date, I think I agree with Senator Otto's observation that January 1 would seem to be an appropriate date. It would let the ERB deal with the basic issue of these units, but yet it wouldn't delay the implementation of the basic concept very long. I understand AFSCME's concern. I think that nobody wants another bargaining unit, another set of negotiations that you have to deal with, and fragmentation of units and so on. We're not in the same position, so I don't have the same objections as they do. The unit that I'm speaking to is a unit in of itself already, and so if you move them under the binding arbitration statute, it just gives us a different status. I still favor the bill.
Okay, well, it looks like we have a split in the House of Labor.
That's unusual.
Senator, can you give us just a minute?
Sure. Well, they're discussing that. I think we could. I think I've seen a consensus developing around the amendments.
Okay. Madam Chair, we could support this bill if we could somehow, this is off the top of our head, so I'm going to a chance to think about this real clearly. If we could exclude or grandfather out the city of Portland.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, we're going to close the public hearing on this. I'd like to see what the committee's pleasure is with respect to this bill. I think, first of all, we have to deal with the amendments.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
I would move the amendments with the changes on 9-8 from July 1, 1986 to January 1, 1986.
Okay. Senator Hall moves HB 2288-1, dated 5-13-85, with that line 8, July 1st, deleted, and January 1st, put in place.
That I have again.
Okay, is there any objection to those amendments? Hearing none, that'll be so ordered. Now, I guess the other issue is the issue that's been raised by AFSCME is a policy issue, is that we will be, by giving these workers, new emergency telephone workers, the same status as firefighters and guards and police officers, we're going to create some unit fragmentation. And apparently, from what Mr. Mosley says, our choices are either, well, we guess we have three choices. One, to do nothing and leave the law the way it is and let these emergency telephone workers have the right to strike. Two, pass the bill with the amendments, which will have the effect of allowing the public employers to petition the board for a unit redefinition or changing the statute to turn over the case law from the Employment Relation Board so that if you have a mixed unit, the whole unit goes to binding arbitration. Those are our three choices. So I don't know if there's any discussion of, from the committee. Senator Howell.
Well, Madam Chair, I think the overriding issue here, that's certainly an issue. But the overriding issue here is a bill to improve the health, safety, and welfare of the population of the state of Oregon. And if you believe that, you know, the purpose of that bill is this, and you believe in putting those treating those emergency people the same way that we have treated police and fire and some other classifications of work, prison guards, then you really shouldn't have any trouble supporting the bill, the concept. Mm-hmm. The organizational problem, you know, to me becomes a secondary problem. It's a problem, but it's certainly secondary to what we're supposed to be doing here, and that's to enact legislation that's to the benefit of the residents of the state of Oregon. I can support this legislation on that basis, even though there are some negative effects that happens personnel-wise. My prime objective here is to make sure that 911 during operators, during labor disputes, are there at the telephone. Because I may be recipient of one of those phone calls.
Okay, is there any other discussion among the committee members where their thoughts are?
Well, I'm supportive of the amendments as proposed by Senator Houck, and I'm ready to move the bill.
Okay, any other discussion? This is going to be having to go to a conference committee, so if this bill is passed out. If the House doesn't accept these amendments, if they do accept it, then that'll be it. Okay. Is there any other discussion? Senator Starkus?
Well, yeah, I guess I'm a little uneasy about the bargaining unit division problem that AFSCME faces. And if it means getting the bill out, if you need my vote to get it out, I'll vote for it. Otherwise, I'll probably vote no.
Okay, is What's the committee's pleasure with respect to the bill?
Madam Chair, I would move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Harp moves House Bill 2288 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll. There's no further discussion.
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Dernstein?
Aye.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
No.
Senator
Henderson? Aye. Okay. We have House Bill 2900. We have Representative Hill.
My house number is 90.
Okay, we've got proposed amendments to this bill as well that have been proposed by the Newspaper Publishers Association.
What bill are we on?
We're on 2900. We've asked Representative Hill to come. And Paul Tiffany is here in the event that we have questions as to how the amendments would be administered and the bill. John Gervais is here. So, in your bill file, you should find a draft dated 5/13/85, which is the Newspaper Publishers Association amendments, and apparently those are to address from their point of view the situation.